Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and this is Greg McBride. He's a senior vice president and chief analyst at Bankrate, a regular contributor to our show. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Great, John. Good to be with you again.
Federal Reserve, first time in 3 years, raised interest rates. So what's that mean to me?
I think the significant thing here isn't necessarily the quarter point interest rate hike itself, but what it signals. This is the beginning of a series of rate hikes we're going to see through the balance of this year, likely well into next year as well. Inflation's running at a 40-year high, and now the Fed has to chase that down. And the way they start is by raising short-term interest rates. And the expectation is that they're going to continue to do so at every of one of their six remaining meetings this year. So that's going to hit borrowing costs. Again, the initial impact, kind of small, like that quarter point rate hike itself, but the cumulative effect is one that will grow. And I think that's really the main thing to keep an eye on is that these costs are going to go up pretty notably over the course of the next year or two. And that can have an impact on the household budget, but it can also have an impact on the broader economy and job market as well.
So if it makes it more expensive to borrow money, people are less likely to borrow money, and therefore there's less demand for fewer goods. And so then inflation goes back down, right? Then why aren't they?
Historically, that's been a pretty effective way to corral inflation. The wrinkle this time is that the supply chain is really the root of so much of this inflation we've seen. And then you've got the added layer of commodity price pressures from the war in Ukraine. So that tried and true playbook of raising interest rates to kind of pump the brakes on demand that's worked so well in the past, it's not going to be a panacea this time around. So, it just kind of complicates what's already a pretty complicated picture on the inflation side.
So maybe it doesn't work? I mean, I was wondering why they weren't more aggressive. You're suggesting maybe it's not going to be all that efficacious at all.
Well, it's not going to cure the problem. I mean, it over time, the effect of raising interest rates, the cumulative impact, will bring down inflation. Mm-hmm. But as long as we've got supply chain constraints, two major cities, manufacturing hubs in China this week were basically on lockdown. That creates another ripple of supply chain issues that'll make its way across the Pacific. That's not something higher interest rates are going to fix. The war in Ukraine and what that's meaning in terms of how much money we're pouring into the gas tank or how much money we're spending at the supermarket. Yeah, that's a form of tightening in and of itself. I think that is something the Fed is likely to factor in too. So, it's just that interest rates are not going to be the panacea they've been in the past. It'll definitely help. It's going to take time.
Does it impact our equities-based savings? Does it affect retirement accounts that way, up or down, more or less?
Well, volatility. We're going to definitely see a lot more volatility, much as we have since the beginning of the year, which we've seen a market correction in large part because the cost of money is going to go up. The Fed is not going to be as stimulative. This is not going to be a year where the returns come as easy as they did last year. This is not going to be a year where every time you check your 401k balance, it's going up, up, up. There's going to be, a lot of choppiness, kind of like we saw yesterday, right? We had big up in the morning, then the market gave all that back and went into the red in the afternoon, and then reversed course and finished up really strong. It's just going to kind of be one of those years, so you kind of got to buckle the seatbelt.
Yeah, right. One last question. Where will I most likely notice a quarter point in the Fed? Is my auto loan going to go up? I understand that home mortgages are over 4. Not that that's that different than 3.5, but where will we most likely notice an increase in this rate?
Mortgage rates are up a full percentage point just since the beginning of the year. So I think that's the one that's most evident. In terms of your variable rate debts, your credit card, your home equity line of credit, those are going to start marching higher. You may see that rate hike as soon as your next statement cycle.
How about that? Okay, that's Greg McBride. Real pleasure to visit with you there, Greg. We appreciate the information. He's the Senior Vice President and Chief Analyst at Bankrate. Thank you, sir. We're frequently joined by Joan Salzman, a senior reporter at CNET. Joan, we have been talking all morning about the fact that Netflix is going to roll out in a few countries a method by which they charge people to share their Netflix passwords. And we just have a million questions about how that's going to work. Are you up to speed on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the basics are that in Chile, Costa Rica and Peru, and Netflix was going to be testing this idea of basically introducing a subscription add-on. You know, people aren't supposed to share their passwords with anyone outside of their household. And so they're going to be testing out this concept of, well, hey, if you want to share your password with two other people, you can have like two add-on accounts for basically like $3 more to your normal subscription. And again, this is for now a test in just three countries.
So if, all right, here's just an example of some of the questions we have. Like, if I have a Netflix account at my house, but I also have a condo in another town, will it care? Does it accommodate that scenario? I don't have to pay extra to get the Netflix operating in my other property, do I?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer, if you look at their terms of service, should be that that is fine. Like the idea that is your household. Now, they haven't said anything about how they will. What you're actually asking is like, how are they going to really enforce password sharing and their terms? This is kind of what they, it's a new form of what they've sort of called soft enforcement. So Netflix has, for example, a limit on how many simultaneous streams you have. You can have only one on the cheapest account. You can have four on the most expensive one. And by having that limit at four on the most expensive account, that does have sort of a soft limit on how many different places can be streaming Netflix from one single subscription, right? Now, Netflix has never been one to be really strict enforcement actions unless it's that a very small subset of accounts that are clearly abusing password sharing, where there's lots and lots of different different computers in different locations using accounts. So they haven't said, to answer your question, but I would imagine it's unlikely that you would have to deal with a situation where they start cracking down on you because you're using it in a condo and in, you know, your home city.
Okay. And if I had 10 kids in 10 different towns.
Well, if you have 10 kids, so long as they're all under the same roof.
At one point they were, but now they're scattered. But we considered ourselves a household. But maybe now that kids is, you know, how do you define a household, right? The kids, he's away for
exactly.
4 years. So it does get to be complicated, doesn't it? Well, do they need the money? I mean, they have 220 million subscribers. Everybody's paying double digits for their accounts these days. So, they have a lot of money coming in.
Yeah, and I think the issue isn't necessarily the amount of money they're getting from the subscribers that they already have. It has more to do with the subscribers they're not getting because people are password sharing. It's not so much about making more money. It's more about expanding the subscriber base, which, you know, growth has always been the thing that Wall Street focuses on with Netflix, that investors focus on with Netflix. And in saturated markets like the U.S., it's just really hard to get more customers because so many people already subscribe. Or there's not very many people in places like the U.S. or the U.K., those places where Netflix first started, that haven't tried it yet and decided whether or not they want to be a long-term subscriber. And so, yeah, this is definitely more an effort to figure out how they can find new subscribers, maybe in this pool of people that are password sharing instead of being a subscriber on their own.
Yeah. I want to ask you about some other topics today, like the Ukrainian president and that deepfake. But before we get to that, just one last thing. Do you have any idea how many people are violating those terms of service with either Netflix or any of these platforms? How much password sharing is going on out there?
Netflix has never disclosed it. In fact, none of the streaming services like to disclose much about password sharing in the assumption that A, it can be competitive information, and also B, they don't want to enable people or embolden people to do it more. So there's no hard details about how much people are doing, but we know that it's popular. I mean, just like anecdotally.
Yeah, I think it's
everybody
about 90.
Knows people that password
I think it's 98%, but okay, we'll leave
right.
it at that.
I think that's about a fair guess.
You think? Facebook has removed a deep fake of the Ukrainian president. That's where you take actual video of somebody and you're able to literally make it look like they were saying something they did not. So what was that video saying? Can you cue us in a little bit here?
You know, I actually don't know. CNET hasn't seen the video. And I think in the interest of not perpetuating whatever misinformation or untrue information it was trying to get out there, it makes sense that Facebook Meta hasn't been repeating whatever it was. But it does sort of speak to, you know, the idea of deepfakes, I think, are very terrifying to people. The idea that AI can so convincingly, you know, invent a video of somebody like a world leader, especially of a world leader during wartime. But it does kind of speak to the fact that, you know, traditional cruder methods of disinformation, like Russia is a great example, where suppression of free press, just authoritarian state-backed propaganda, and simply world leaders, like, you know, people in power lying. It's a crude form of misinformation, but it can be very, very effective, and Russia is an example of that.
Well, imagine that. I mean, Russian people aren't really getting the truth, but if TASS released a faked video of Zelensky saying terrible things, that might be a persuasive way for them to try and justify the war to their own population. But it's a complete lie. Kanye West has been suspended from Instagram for a day. Why'd they kick him off, and why just for a day?
Well, it's sort of the escalation. There's been a series of online, a conflict, you know, sort of people refer to it like a love triangle that's escalated online between Kanye West and his ex-wife and her new partner, Pete Davidson. But in the most recent example, Trevor Noah of The Daily Show posted a clip of his show in which he kind of delves into the questions that the story raises that society might want to consider and ask itself. And it was a racial slur in response to that post that got Kanye booted for a day.
For a day. Okay. And that's the latest then on the tech scene. We've got more to talk about next time, Joan. Thanks for digging a little deeper for us on that Netflix stuff. And let's visit again next week.
Would love to. Thank you so much.
Joan Salzman reports for CNET. Mike Sales is the CEO of Fresh Street. FreshStreet.com is the website. This is a Chicago-based startup that we've talked about here on the Business Lunch before. It's kind of going to change the way you shop for groceries. And starting tomorrow, they're offering their curbside grocery pickup service with over 4,000 items or SKUs. Let's talk a little bit about that with Mike Sales. Hey, Mike, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You nervous about tomorrow?
That is one of the many feelings that I'm experiencing right now, for sure.
Is this brand new? I mean, are you in other markets, or are you already out with a limited service?
This is our first location starting here in Chicago, and you know, we've been testing everything this week, so we should be ready to rock and roll tomorrow. But you know, really excited to be able to share what we've been working on with everyone.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, so what's your model? How are you going to sell groceries and items?
Yeah, so everything that we do will be done online, whether that's through our website and or our apps on both iOS and Android devices. And so the way it works is you place your order online. Our team will shop it for you, and then when it's ready, you'll get a notice to come pick it up, and we'll put your groceries in your trunk, and you drive away. And so for us, it's about how do we focus on the online shopping experience and just make it as seamless and easy and affordable as we can.
Other grocery stores already offer a sort of they pack, you pick up service, right? How is this different?
Yeah, that's right. You know, the way I always describe it to folks is, you know, no one ever built a Jewel in the 1990s and said, you know, someday, you know, people are going to want to order their groceries on the internet, and you know, we really need to be ready for it. And so the way I think about it is, you know, if you just wanted to provide the absolute best online experience, and that was the only thing that you were going to try to do, what would you look like? What would that look like if you had a blank sheet of paper and could start over? And so, you know, that's what we've really tried to focus on end to end, everything from the way the website and the apps are designed to how big each location is to the number of items that we carry to the pickup experience itself. And so for us, it's about how do we make it fast? Mm-hmm. How do we make it affordable? How do we make it so that we're consistently in stock and we don't have substitute items? And there's a lot of pain points that exist currently in the online grocery world that are really a function of retailers trying to provide both an in-store experience and an online one.
So you're not a brick and mortar store that I would shop per se. You're a parking lot I'm going to drive through and pick up my groceries. Where, who's your wholesaler? I mean, how are you storing or acquiring the food?
Yeah, so we're working with all the largest distributors that you could think of across the country. So we're, one of the things we like about this model is because we don't have our own warehouse network that we're having to pull product from, we're able to source from multiple different suppliers. So for every item that we sell, you know, we want to have at least two, if not three, different places that we can go and get it from. So that way, if it's out of stock somewhere, we can go and buy it from somewhere else. And so that way, for our users, we're more consistently in stock. And that's how we get around having substitute items and you know, being able to deliver more consistent product availability.
So when I shop, say, from the app, would it be on my phone or on my laptop? What's the lag time between my placing the order and it being ready for me to pick up?
Yeah, so we say 30 minutes or less. You know, and but you also have the ability to plan further out as well. So we provide the option to, you know, to order, you know, the next day or a couple of days out. But for now, we're starting with 30 minutes or less. Once we really get up and running, we should be able to do it even faster. But that's what we're focused on out of the gates.
Talk to me about your prices. So do you have some either loss leaders or are you consistently going to be below whom? Jewel, Whole Foods, Aldi? Who's your competition price-wise?
Yeah, so we look a lot at what, you know, Jewel and Mariano's are doing from a pricing perspective, and our goal is to be more consistently lower than they are on their pricing. We're gonna have a little bit of a different strategy. I mean, Jewel does a lot of high-low pricing.
Uh-huh.
You know, our goal is to be more provide, you know, more consistent everyday low prices. So we may not match some of their more extreme deals, but I think we'll be more consistently affordable than what you find there. And I think the other piece to that, too, is, you know, Jewel and Mariano's and others are pretty transparent that the prices they charge online are different than the prices they charge in store, right? So they're charging you more online beyond just any sort of fees to get your groceries delivered or picked up. But they actually charge different prices, yeah.
Well, it must be a great advantage to you to not have to house customers and clerks in the store. I mean, I don't know what the electric bill or what it costs to keep a grocery store running, but it would seem to me like there must be some economy there for you, right?
Yeah. So I think a lot of that starts with the size of the space. So, you know, a typical grocery store could be, you know, anywhere around 60,000 square feet. You know, Walmart is 100,000 square feet to 120. And we're operating out of 10,000 square feet. So that is definitely part of the savings and the ability to provide more affordable pricing. We don't have to pay for any of the checkout equipment or any of the, you know, anything like that. Some of the fixtures that you find in a traditional grocery store. So, you know, all of that just allows us to stay lean and keep our prices low.
There goes the impulse buy, though, right? I mean, maybe somebody will look at a website and go, "Ooh, I want Doritos," but maybe less likely that than when you're in the store.
Yeah, 100%. And that, you know, gets into, you know, that is part of why, you know, that in-store experience that, you know, we've, you know, all grew up with and love, you know, it's just fundamentally different than the online shopping experience. Yeah. Online shopping is very different, and the needs of that user or consumer are very different. And so, you know, we can cater an assortment around that where, you know, I like to call it a focused assortment. We have over 4,000 SKUs, but if, you know, you were to walk around the store like I am right now, you know, I don't think you'd look around and say we're missing anything. It's really about, you know, let's take candy, which is an impulse category. You know, we don't need to carry all those items at checkout. We might be able to carry just the larger pack sizes because someone buying groceries online, that's what they're more interested in.
Yeah.
And then by carrying a narrower assortment, we can carry more inventory of those items and be more consistently in stock.
Mike Sales is the CEO of Fresh Start, or Fresh Street. FreshStreet.com is the website. That's an interesting sort of thought and strategy. My problem is I won't impulse buy online Doritos, but I want Doritos. So, so I got to figure that out. But starting tomorrow, the curbside pickup begins. What's the location? Where do people pick it up then? On Lincoln Avenue?
Yep, that's right, 6191 North Lincoln Ave.
West Rogers Park. Good luck to you, Mike. We'll be in touch. I hope you do well.
Great. Thanks for having me.
It's 12:45. This is WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. With more business news, here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Chicago Bears have hired an architect and consultants to start drawing up plans for a new stadium complex in Arlington Heights. The Daily Herald reports the Bears have hired three firms, including Chicago commercial real estate agent Jones Lang LaSalle, Manica Architecture of Kansas City, and Denver-based sports management consultancy CAA Icon. Manica designed a stadium for the Las Vegas Raiders, and CAA worked on the renovation of Wrigley Field. The Bears announced in September the purchase of the 326-acre Arlington International Racecourse for $197.2 million. A partnership that includes Lisle-based Navistar International says plans are moving forward to develop self-driving semi-trucks for production by 2024. The company and its technology partner TuSimple conducted a successful test run of a semi in Arizona last year. According to Cranes, a Navistar truck delivered a load of freight from a rail yard in Tucson to a distribution center 80 miles away in Phoenix with no human driver in the cab. The technology uses GPS and sensors to navigate the roads. DHL has already reserved 100 of the Navistar TuSimple trucks. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Yeah, March Madness is a lot of fun. This past month or so has been a lot of fun for Illinois high school teams. All this winter sports have been played. The state championship trophies have been handed out. Everything from basketball to bowling. But there is one more big competition Saturday, and this is for the high school teams that play with knives.
This is our annual competition, and we're very, very excited about it.
Sam Toya is president and CEO of the Illinois Restaurant Association, and Saturday, teams from five schools will compete in the 22nd annual Illinois Pro Start Invitational.
The schools that are participating are Benito Juarez, Manly in Chicago, Oswego High School, Rolling Meadows High School, and Technology Center of DuPage.
25 pros from the food industry will judge the dishes prepared for taste and creativity, among other things, in a, well, it's a blind competition.
Yes, it's a full course meal. We can't really say what the product is because they did it that morning. Here's your products, you know, now produce it and see, you know, who wins. So it's a lot like a Top Chef program or a Master Chef program.
And there's a separate competition for students in restaurant management, the front end.
It's literally like opening a restaurant and you're giving your plan like you would to a bank. Would they give you a loan, or to investors? Would they invest in you?
200 people will be on hand to cheer their teams.
And basically it goes from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's 3 hours of competition. It will be held at Kendall College at National Lewis University, and the title sponsor is Cisco, so we're very grateful to Cisco.
And the winners go on to the Nationals in Washington, D.C. in May. You can probably tell that Sam Toya of the Restaurant Association is, well, he's passionate about the business, which he admits has been through the ringer.
Oh, it's the last 23, 24 months have been rough on the restaurant industry.
But
restaurants are the soul of every neighborhood throughout our 77 communities here in the city of Chicago. We are going to bounce back, and we will stay the culinary capital of the United States. I don't care what they say in San Francisco, New York. We are the culinary capital, and we will stay the culinary capital.
There you go. From the farm to your belly today, of course, is National Corned Beef and Cabbage Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the consequences that some businesses are suffering, Amy Guth, when they decide to pull out of or restrict their businesses in Russia. What are you hearing?
Yeah, this is really kind of a wild story. So Ali Maradi at Cranes has been following McDonald's very carefully, in particular because, of course, they're based here, and they closed 847 stores in Russia when everything erupted. And so what has been happening, and she's been following this really carefully. I recommend everybody go read her reporting on this because it's so interesting. But essentially, I'm going to try to boil this down, but Russia's Ministry of Economic Development said that it would consider lifting restrictions on trademarks for companies that had stopped doing business there. So essentially, it would kind of legalize patent theft from companies that were from what they were describing as unfriendly countries. Since then, Ali Maradi has learned that several applications have been filed to use the McDonald's arches. Essentially, it's like one is like flipping the arches on its side and calling it Uncle Vanya's, of course, named after the Russian play. Also, there have been applications for McDuck, which is kind of the way we would say Mickey D's. So McDuck is sort of Russian slang for McDonald's. And then also just the word McDonald's. There's also been some applications filed for Starbucks, things like that. So theoretically, and Ali talked with an intellectual property attorney who's been following this and who's working with a Ukrainian lawyer to kind of translate all of this. Essentially, someone could open a burger place with a very similar menu. Obviously, it wouldn't be the same food, but they could kind of try to call McDonald's if that, you know, that application goes through, or Uncle Vanya's or McDuck or Starbucks or any of those sorts of things. The one, the application for the McDonald's word is probably the one that would be most concerning to the company, because that could be potentially confusing for the brand, right? But obviously, I think consumers would understand McDuck's or Uncle Vanya's would be different, even though the arches are there. But it's really just kind of interesting to watch how this has sort of opened up. Also, Peppa Pig apparently is up for grabs in Russia. So it's a bit wild just to kind of follow this story and see sort of the latest shoe to drop here for companies pulling out of that. Now, there's no evidence that any of the McDonald's restaurants, the shuttered locations, have been opened, but certainly trademark applications would be a first step to doing so.
We're going to make this report shorter than normal today, but give me 30 seconds on Amazon acquiring MGM. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a very, very big deal. In fact, it's their second biggest behind Whole Foods. So Amazon has closed that deal. We knew it was coming. They announced it in a blog post in May, but $8.5 billion. So they now have MGM. That's one of the oldest studios in Hollywood. That's a lot. That's 17,000 TV show episodes. That's 4,000 film titles. That's a lot that will really boost Prime Video and Amazon Studios. The Whole Foods deal in 2017, that was $13.7 billion. Just kind of put it in perspective that this $8.5 billion deal is a pretty big one.
For those of us that go, gee, Amazon seems to own everything, it seems like Amazon owns everything. Thank you, Amy Guth.